Inviting you to a community forum we will be hosting called What is Happening in Bolivia on Tuesday, January 28th from 6:45 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons Cafe. We will discuss why we are calling the events of November 10th, 2019 and the aftermath a coup, issues that are of concern to Bolivians, the role of the U.S., and how we can support efforts for peace and justice. This event is free and wheelchair accessible, and live music by La Rosa and Clandestino Roots and Culture starts at 6:45 p.m. Again, that's Brooklyn for Peace Forum on Bolivia, called What is Happening in Bolivia, on Tuesday, January 28th from 6:45 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons Cafe. For more information, call Brooklyn for Peace at 718-624-5921.
Well, this is John Kane from Let's Talk. On Thursday, January 30th, 7 p.m., I'll be screening a film that captures the raw truth of the U.S. and Canadian residential schools. Indian Horse relays the horrors of the 100-year residential school era and the racism that allowed them. Come join me for my first WBAI event of the year featuring Indian Horse at 7 p.m. Thursday, January 30th at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York.
Joy of resistance, we're sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy of resistance, we have found the joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up, don't underestimate our persistence. Found this joy in resistance. We got a way to go before we're free. We're keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. We're sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
And good evening. This is the Joy of Resistance Multicultural Feminist Radio at WBAI. I am Fran Luck, and every week we bring you information and frontline reports from the very front lines of the feminist movement that is happening all over the world. And tonight is no exception. We're going to be taking a look at two very important pieces of feminist legislation. One is the very startling and wonderful fact that the Equal Rights Amendment, in play for the last 96 years, has finally made it very, very close to becoming part of the U.S. Constitution. And we're going to be speaking with Kamala Lopez, who is the founder and CEO of Equal Means Equal, which is also a film which she directed, and she is a frontline activist. And we know that it's not as easy as it sounds. Just because you've gotten the 38 necessary ratifications does not mean you get into the U.S. Constitution just like that. There are some big hurdles. So we're going to be speaking to her about what they are and what you can be doing. The second thing we're going to look at is a potential piece of civil rights legislation that's going to make another very important piece of civil rights legislation even better, we hope. The piece of civil rights legislation that we're going to be looking at and the amendments that are being proposed to it is something called the Equality Act. The Equality Act seeks to protect various categories of people in regard to their gender identity, identity, their sex, whether they are being harassed or oppressed or discriminated against over whether they fit into certain gender stereotypes, I should say sex stereotypes. And we will be speaking with Anne Menashe, who is a socialist activist, and she is a founder of the group FIST, or Feminists in Struggle, which is a new national group. And they are putting forth a new legal add-on to something that is very important that's already passed the House of Representatives called the Equality Act. What they're doing is adding amendments, and the amendments are called the Feminist Amendments to the Equality Act, because they do not think that the Equality Act goes far enough in protecting women's rights. And we're going to hear about that tonight. So before we get to all these great interviews, we are going to read a little bit of the worldwide feminist news. So stay tuned. Virginia became the 38th state to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment on January 15th. 38 ratifications are necessary for an amendment to be added to the U.S. Constitution, but the ERA still faces an uphill climb. The amendment was first introduced in 1923 by Alice Paul and was seen as the next step for women's rights after winning the vote 3 years earlier. But it was not passed by both houses of Congress until 1972, when at the height of the explosion of modern feminism, it rapidly gained 35 of the 38 state ratifications needed. But then it stalled as the Stop ERA campaign led by Phyllis Schlafly arose and the backlash against all of the gains of the 1960s and 70s gained momentum. The ERA had come with a deadline for ratification, but that ran out in 1982. Today, those who have never stopped advocating for the passage of ERA are questioning the legal validity of that deadline, which is not a part of most amendments. But the Trump Justice Department under William Barr is claiming the ERA to be null and void. Later in the program, as a matter of fact, right after the news, we'll speak with Kamala Lopez, founder of Equal Means Equal, a group in the forefront of the ERA fight on what is next in the long struggle to finally put the ERA into the Constitution and what that would do for women. The Supreme Court said Friday that it will take up the case of whether a Trump administration rule, which is aimed at granting further religious exemptions to the contraception coverage in the Affordable Care Act, will prevail. The Trump administration has teamed up with, quote, the Little Sisters of the Poor, close quote, a group of nuns who are the plaintiffs in the case and who are claiming that they are being forced to comply with regulations against their religious beliefs. The contraceptive mandate of the ACA was one of the few major advances for women's rights in the past decade. The benefit requires most employers to include coverage of FDA-approved contraceptives without a copay, saving women, according to one study, $1.4 billion in 2013 alone, or each woman saving approximately $255 per year. The ACA, from its beginning, did include granting exemptions to religious organizations and their affiliates. But conservatives had tried to chip away at the birth control coverage by broadening these exemptions that are granted to employers to opt out on religious grounds. Exemptions were broadened in 2014 to include private companies. In 2017, Donald Trump, by executive order, broadened exemptions to include religiously oriented companies. And then nonprofits were also able to object on, quote, moral grounds. According to Jessica Mason Pieklo, writing in Rewire.news, the logic of this case is to argue that the only way to protect the religious beliefs of the Little Sisters is to overturn the entire contraceptive mandate. All right. Two libraries at opposite ends of the country have disagreed over whether feminists who are, quote, gender critical, have the right to free speech on their premises. The Seattle Public Library was approached by the Women's Liberation Front, or WOLF, to hold an event on February 1st entitled Fighting the New Misogyny, a Feminist Critique of Gender Identity, which WOLF said would, quote, make powerful arguments for sex-based rights for women. The library received hundreds of letters, both for and against the event proceeding, but eventually decided to allow it. In a statement, Marcellus Turner, chief librarian of the Seattle Public Library, said the library, quote, must maintain its role as a stalwart protector of intellectual freedom for all, ensuring that all voices, even unpopular or offensive voices, are able to be heard, close quote. Meanwhile, in New York City, the New York Public Library received a request to hold a similar event entitled, quote, An Evening with Canceled Women, referring to how often spaces hosting forums questioning current gender ideology in any degree under pressure cancel such events. The New York Public Library did opt to cancel the Canceled Woman event, which took place in another location on January 17th. At issue is whether public policy that arises from the push for the rights of transgender people but is claimed to have negative effects on already existing women's rights can be openly debated in the public sphere. The American Library Association, the oldest U.S. library professional organization, has stated in its Library Bill of Rights, quotes, libraries which make meeting rooms available to the public they serve should make such facilities available on an equitable basis, regardless of the beliefs or affiliations of individuals or groups requesting their use. In the spirit of free speech and inquiry, which characterizes this radio station, we'll be speaking with Ann Menashe, a San Diego civil rights attorney, a socialist activist, and a founder of FIST, or Feminists in Struggle, on a new legal initiative aiming to resolve some of these ongoing disputes. It is called the Feminist Amendments to the Equality Act. So please stay tuned for that important discussion. And before we sign off with the news, let me advise listeners that those of you who are members of WBAI should watch your mailboxes for what will be a very important ballot that you really must not ignore if you want WBAI to continue functioning. It is a ballot about proposed new bylaws, which would do away with local control. They would do away with our local station board. They would completely diminish the amount of people sitting on the national board. They would increase the bar for membership. In other words, they would make it much harder for there to be democracy in how Pacifica functions, and would erase bylaws that were fought for in terms of listener participation in democracy. So what you've got to do is get a hold of that ballot and vote no. That's N-O, no, if you want to save WBAI. A word to the wise is sufficient. And we'll be back in a few minutes with our guest, Kamala Lopez. Thank you.
Hot pants and and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making up for all those years since I've got the pill. I'm tired of all your crowing, how you and your hens play.
And we're just listening to a little bit of Loretta Lynn's The Pill, a song for which she got into a lot of trouble in the 1980s when it hit the country music circuit. But a very wonderful, radical, and forward-looking great song. I love to play it. And, of course, we're still fighting over The Pill, as you've heard if you listened to the news just now. This is Fran Luck, and this show is The Joy of Resistance, Multicultural Feminist Radio at WBAI. Glad to come to you every Monday night between 9 and 10 p.m. And we have our first guest of the evening on the phone, and I'm very happy to say that she's Kamala Lopez. Kamala is an actress, a filmmaker, an activist. She's president of Heroica, that's H-E-R-O-I-C-A Films, and she helped to launch a movement through her documentary film Equal Means Equal to educate Americans about the importance of equal rights under federal law for women and to complete the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Kamala, good evening.
Hi, what an exciting day to be with you and your audience, because I have a very exciting announcement today.
Well, please go to it. Yes, we want to hear.
The Equal Rights Amendment was ratified today in Virginia. It passed both chambers of the state legislature and crossover. So all of the hard work that we've been doing in Virginia for the past 4 years has finally completely come to fruition. And even more than that, all the work that we've been doing for the past 97 years or even 243 years has hit a major milestone today, in that we have achieved the 38th and final 38th. State necessary.
Now, I don't want to be a killjoy on this incredible excitement, but I thought I had just announced that it had been ratified on January 15th. Was I wrong in that?
Well, it was ratified on January 15th, but then it had to both bills. So each bill in each chamber has a different number, then they have to cross over and they have to ratify each other's bills.
Okay, I got
it.
So
now all the I's are dotted,
right.
The T's are crossed, and now we await and we move on, unfortunately, to a legal battle, because immediately upon ratification, the Alabama Attorney General filed a lawsuit saying that the archivist may not, should not, record Virginia's 38th state ratification. And that, of course, is completely absurd, given the fact, not only the fact that the Equal Rights Amendment was ratified today, period, whether anybody decides to record it or not, but just to show how political that decision is, we have to look at the fact that over the past couple of years, this very same archivist has recorded both Nevada and Illinois. So what happened between Illinois and
right. And
Virginia?
Just for our listening audience who may not know, and they also were among the last three states that ratified the amendment. So as you're saying,
right.
What's
so
the
this
difference?
Has all
yeah.
happened in the last 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
We got Nevada in March of 2017 and Illinois in the end of May of 2018, and, you know, it was all well and good then. So what has changed, Sir Archivist? And unfortunately, he decided to go ask for advice from Donald Trump's Department of Justice, who absolutely has zero say in the matter, absolutely mm-hmm. nothing to say, and yet decided to offer their ridiculous opinion that the archivist should not record it. And so we filed suit to say, no, Sir Archivist, in fact, you must record it. This is your job, and you are so obligated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we are presently in a legal strategy that will encompass various cases across the nation to enforce the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment, to make sure that it is added into our Constitution as per Article 5. And we are not, equal means equal is not going to stand idly by while misogynistic Department of Justice and other executives take away the gains that we have, millions of us have fought for centuries. It's just not going to happen.
Here, here, yeah. Here, yes. Great. Wonderful. So glad to hear you say that. Tell me, how much of a roadblock is that Alabama suit to the ERA proceeding?
Well, it's not a roadblock. It's, from my point of view, we really need these matters cleared up. There's a very, very old case that the 27th Amendment invalidated that the other side keeps pointing to. It's called Dillon versus Gloss. And we really need to get to the bottom of this issue of contemporaneity in the amendment process, as well as the issue of the fact that the Equal Rights Amendment did not have a deadline in the legislation. It was a separate bill that the states did not vote on. So there are multiple things we have to just get some, and we're very, very confident that the law will fall on our side, because it's absurd that they're going to uphold Dillon when the 27th Amendment was ratified after 204 years.
Right.
It's called the Madison Amendment. It was written by Madison, and they're doing that in the 90s and telling us we can't have more than 7 years.
That's James, not Oscar.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and so, you know, so I just think that women have been very frightened about going to the courts because we've got PTSD. But what we need to understand is this is not one of those cases. This is a very simple, very conservative argument that we're making. It's a federalist originalist argument, which is basically, it says in the Constitution that upon 75% of the states being ratified, the amendment shall be adopted. And therefore, we are entreating the court to follow the Constitution.
Take that, you constitutionalist. Right. You're being like the constitutionalist constructionists, right? We're just taking
it
literally.
Good. Conservative. So we're making a conservative argument. We think it's a conservative court that's going to stand up for that argument for multiple reasons, and perhaps the Equal Rights Amendment is something that they're just going to go, well, what the heck? So much has changed. Are we really going to vote here and now against equal rights for a majority of the population? How does that look? And I don't think that they're going to vote against the ERA. But I do think that if people waste a whole hell of a lot of time in the graveyard that is the congressional vote looking for Mitch McConnell to validate us, it's absurd. And also, it's just incorrect.
Okay, let me just stop you for a minute, Kamala. Are you saying that there are people who want to go through a congressional route to do this?
That's correct. And what I'm saying about that is that, first of all, the job of Congress was completed. That was completed in 1972. Mm-hmm. So, and the Constitution is very clear about the co-equal branches of government in the amendatory process. There's a place for the executive branch. That was when the president signed it. There was a place for Congress when they passed it. And then it came to the states. And that's the phase we just completed.
Okay,
it is not now for us to revisit, to invite the executive branch or the congressional branch to weigh in on something that's already decided.
Okay. What is the argument that those folks are using about why they want to go back to Congress?
So they want to declare the deadline invalid through congressional action.
Okay.
The deadline is invalid, period, simply because of the two, multiple reasons, but the two main ones is, number one, it was never part of the ERA. And therefore, nobody ever voted for a deadline. Number two, nowhere in the Constitution does it provide for deadlines or give any guidance on how long they should be. And number three, the Madison Amendment was just ratified after 204 years.
Okay.
So that's our argument, but what they are suggesting, and this is a political thing, just like what's going on right now in presidential politics, the House would like to vote in support of women. And therefore, they will vote in support of women. And wonderful, and I love all of them, and I'm so glad they support women. But if they really think that that bill is going to go into the graveyard that is Mitch McConnell's basement and ever get out of there with a vote, I got a bridge to sell them.
All right.
And so what I'm saying is we're in the courts. We're in the courts.
That's what I thought, yeah.
You can either accept that and do something about it, get on that, or you can fantasize that one day after it gets voted out of the House, somebody will decide to bring it onto the floor of the Senate.
Okay, so tell me about the court case. Who's in back of it and what are its premises?
So right now, the main court case that we are in is a mirror lawsuit like the one the Alabama, Louisiana, South Dakota attorneys general filed saying the archivist may not record Virginia. We have a suit out of the Massachusetts court saying the archivist must record Virginia. That's going to get us to understand who feels what about that.
Okay.
Second thing is, the case in Alabama, it's very important that women don't sort of stand back. We need to stop playing defense. We have to take, especially now in this legal phase, we have to take an offensive posture. So that means allowing the Attorney General of Alabama, for God's sakes, to collude essentially with a Trump appointee to dismiss ERA for whatever reasons they want because no one's interfering in Alabama is not a good legal strategy either. So all that to say, every woman lawyer needs to take a look at this and really fight. We need to get out there and fight for our Equal Rights Amendment and not allow partisan politics and the whole idea of passing women back and forth as an election year football, right, to raise money for this one or that one. I'm sorry. I understand that it's important for people to raise money for a particular political party. But we've been hearing this for hundreds of years now.
Right.
Now
So I take it that your case is going to be fought on constitutional grounds and that you're gearing up for that.
And we hope to be in the Supreme – we will be in the Supreme Court. And the idea is to get there with, some very good judges' responses to our cases to say, wait a minute, of course this should be ratified.
Okay.
Of course rescissions are not permitted. Of course the deadline was illegal.
Good.
And invalid.
The spirit is absolutely perfect. By the way, we're talking to Kamala Lopez, who is the founder of Equal Means Equal, which is a leading group fighting for the ERA, which is now getting very close to ratification. And we're all very excited and kind of sitting on the edge of our seats. Kamala, in the few minutes that we have left, could you tell us quickly two things. One is what you want our listeners to do to get into this fight now. How can they be most useful? And two, if you can briefly tell us what the ERA would do for women. And that
sure.
I know that's brief.
The first thing I'd like everybody to do is go to equalmeansequal.org and join us by signing up to get our newsletters. That will keep you in the loop on these things that are occurring very quickly.
Okay,
we need to mobilize people.
Right. That's Equal Means Equal, one word, right? No periods. And is that, did you say .org?
Yes.
Okay.
.org.
Equalmeansequal.org. Go there. Okay,
another
go ahead.
Very important thing that listeners can do is plan to show up on March 8th, which is International Women's Day, in Richmond, Virginia, for the ERA parade. It's very important that people understand that we have achieved this milestone and we need to celebrate it publicly because one of the things that is very important for the Supreme Court to understand is that women have internalized and accepted that they are equal, and the society is celebrating that as well. This is the 100th anniversary of suffrage, so there are going to be lot of these kind of celebrations, and we need to show the Supreme Court we're not going back.
That's right. This is our centennial year, and Joy of Resistance will be making that announcement from here on in, every time we are on the air. We're just about out of time.
And then to answer your last question.
Yeah, a sentence or two.
Are we out of time?
Almost. Tracy, even give me a quick answer on it.
The very, very important thing about the Equal Rights Amendment is there will never be equal pay without an ERA. It's just not going to happen. Again, we will never deal with the pandemic of violence in this country. You know, we're number third on the most violent countries in the world for sexual violence, as per the United Nations report that came out last year. If we want to address the violence and sexual harassment and assault in this country, we need an ERA because we need strict scrutiny. Presently, women do not have the same type of scrutiny in cases that other groups do that are, say, protected on the grounds of religion or sexual orientation or something like that. We are religion, nationality, race. All of those things are protected under strict scrutiny. Women, unfortunately, are not. And so we will see with the Equal Rights Amendment a very big improvement in equal justice.
Okay.
And protections for
women.
It
will put a floor under all of this patchwork of different women's rights laws, and we will be able to move a lot farther forward if we have it. I am so excited that this is happening, and I hope our audience is also. Kamala Lopez, thank you so much for coming on to Joy of Resistance. Please, let's stay in touch, and you give us updates as they happen. And everybody, go to equalmeansequal.org and plug into hopefully the home stretch of a struggle that's gone on for 96 years. And if you go back to the Seneca Falls Convention of 1848, right, where getting the vote was proposed, you got, 243 years. Kamala Lopez, onward with the struggle. And thank you so much. All right, we'll be speaking.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, bye bye.
Spinderella cut it up one time. Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex.
Avoid or make void the topic, cause that ain't gonna stop it. Now we talk about sex on the radio and video shows.
Many will know
anything goes. Let's tell it like it is and how it could be, how it was, and of course how it should be. Those who think it's dirty have a choice: pick up the needle, press pause, or turn the radio off. Will that stop us, Pat?
I doubt it.
All right then, come on, spin.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you.
Make any man's eyes pop. She uses, she got to get whatever she don't got. Fellas droop like fools, but then again, they're only human. This chick was a hit because her body was booming. Gold, pearl, rubies, crazy diamonds. Nothing she wore was ever common. Her dates, heads of state, men of taste, lawyers, doctors. No one was too great for her to get with or even mess with. The press, she says, was next on her list. And believe me, you, it's as good as true. There ain't a man alive that she couldn't get next to. She had it all in the bag. She should have been glad.
But she was and yeah, and we're listening to Salt-N-Pepa rap Let's Talk About Sex, which is a very, very relevant bunch of phrases, considering what we're about to talk about, which is going to be women's sex-based rights and definitions of sex itself. And we are going to be talking with Anne Menashe, who is a San Diego civil rights attorney, Green Party member. She's a longtime socialist, and she's a founder of a new national feminist group called FIST, or Feminists in Struggle. Hey, Anne.
Hi. Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You sound good. You're coming through really, really clear.
Good.
So let me first ask you to share with our audience what is FIST and what kind of group
sure.
is it?
Yeah, FIST, a Feminist in Struggle, is a national, a female-only radical feminist network. We're run by our members. We're very democratic. And we're united by 13 principles. And I'm not going to tell you all of them, but encourage people who are listening to check our website, which is feministstruggle.org. But some of those principles include a recognition that women and girls were oppressed based on our biological sex, or the female ability to bear and birth children. We are enthusiastic supporters of the Equal Rights Amendment. We oppose all forms of male violence. We support the abolition of prostitution. We support complete sovereignty over our bodies and reproductive lives, and supporting abortion, birth control, and it keeps going on. We are also, as one of our principles, opposed to any affiliation or collaboration with the right, the religious right, the white supremacist right, or the anti-immigrant right. We are solidly progressive radical feminists.
Okay. All right. And that's going to be relevant as we continue with the discussion. So FIST has introduced a new legal initiative regarding civil rights, and it's called the Feminist Amendments to the Equality Act. Three attorneys who are part of the group worked on it for months, and it's now being passed around for comment. So since we're there's an attempt to amend the Equality Act, which is a bill that passed the House of Representatives in November of 2019. And if the Democrats were to sweep the Senate and to gain the presidency, it is extremely likely that this will become the law of the land. And it already bills that are parallel to the Equality Act have also passed in several states, including in California. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set this up by looking at what the Equality Act is now, the definition that I found on the web in Wikipedia. You can correct that if it's not correct. But just so we know what we are amending, and then we'll talk about why that's important. The Equality
Sure.
Act. The Equality Act is a bill passed by the United States House of Representatives on May 17, 2019, that would amend the Civil Rights Act to, quote, prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, or pregnancy, childbirth, or a related medical condition of an individual, as well as because of sex stereotypes. So that's the present bill that passed the House of Representatives and will continue to pass in different progressive legislatures, if we have any in the near future, we hope. So that bill sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Is there something wrong with it?
Well, let me say what we like about it first.
Okay.
Okay. We're very happy to see that at long last there may be federal protections against discrimination based on sexual orientation. Lesbians, gay men, and bisexuals have struggled for decades, and I've been part of that struggle as a lesbian and a gay rights activist, to win federal protections. And even today, people can still be fired or denied an apartment for being gay. You could get married one day and you go back to work the next and get fired. So it's really important to have federal protections for gays and lesbians. In addition, another thing that we really like about the bill is the prohibition of religious exemptions, which people may have heard of the Masterpiece Cake Shop case involving a Christian baker who refused to bake a cake for a gay couple. And we think those religious exemptions are really dangerous, and we're glad that this bill contains attempts to eliminate those. So those are the two things that we like that stand out in particular. And my concerns, if I can go on and explain what my concerns are.
Yeah. So what do you, What don't you like, basically?
Okay.
What could be
so
better?
So we oppose the use of the term gender identity. And before I explain why, I want to say clearly that we oppose discrimination against transgender people. In fact, as an organization, we strongly believe that all gender nonconforming people, whether or not they identify as transgender, and anyone who fails to conform to the stereotypes assigned to their sex should be protected from discrimination in jobs, housing, businesses, etc. So we are opposed to all discrimination like that. We have a problem with that term and how it's been used, and adding it as a protective class, and we have a better way.
Which term is that you have the problem with?
Gender identity.
Okay.
And so what is the problem with gender identity? First, it's a subjective amorphous concept, and it's basically can be used to perpetrate sex stereotypes, the idea of, that a feminine man can't be a real man, a masculine woman can't be a real woman. So we don't think it's really feminist in its understanding of the way it's been used. But the more important thing is it's been used to supplant sex-based protections under law and erode women's rights to female-only facilities, services, and programs, including things like affirmative action programs, sports programs, special scholarships meant to address, inequality that remains between the sexes. So in the Equality Act itself, it defines gender identity as synonymous with sex. And we think that merging of the two distinct forms of oppression and two protected classes of people, females, people born female with a female reproductive system, and transgender people, is harmful to those who are born female.
Okay.
So there's a better way of doing it. Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to some of that, and we're going to
talk
about how that plays out in real life. But what I wanted to say is my understanding is that right now, all of the Equality Act is built on hanging all of those protections that it mentions on the word sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, right? Where it talks about you cannot be discriminated against on a kind of national origin and a kind of race and on account of sex. So they're sort of hanging everything on sex.
Subordinating everything into sex, right?
Yes.
It's confusing. It's very confusing, and that's a problem.
Okay.
We think there needs to be distinct protections. Basically what happens if you subsume sex, if gender identity subsumes sex, and so gender identity being a class that a transgender person who was born male, that any male could identify into, it makes it difficult to track disparities between the sexes of the epidemic of male violence. It's very difficult to track that or create the remedies that are needed. It's a sex-neutral kind of idea, or sex blindness, which is analogous to racial blindness. And I think most progressive people understand that racial blindness is not progressive because you fail to track racial disparities, and you can't adopt racially conscious remedies to racism if you don't see racism.
Does this have something to do with the fact that in many legal documents the word gender is now replacing the word or concept of sex?
Yes. It's very confusing because gender in the dictionary has, besides grammar meanings, has two substantive meanings. One is as an equivalent of sex. So people would say gender because it sounded less, sexy than sex. So they would use gender to substitute for sex, but they meant biological sex. The second definition is right out of the dictionary is, quote, the behavioral, cultural, or psychological traits typically associated with one's sex, And that is a social construct that can change over time. Some societies, or even 100 years ago, pink was a male color because it was strong. Now it's a female color. Different kinds of clothes, different behaviors, different kinds of jobs that have changed over time. Men used to be secretaries. Now women are secretaries.
So that's all gender.
Gender is social constructs, right?
And that are based on sex. Or attached to sex.
Superimposed by a sexist society onto sex, correct. So we're concerned about that. We think there's a better way of doing it. And then the other problem is, well, first of all, the other thing that is pretty striking is it's very anemic findings with regard to sex discrimination. It really says very little about the continuing inequality between the sexes. I think it needs to be much more robust.
This is in the Equality Act. This is a criticism of the Equality Act.
Right.
Say
and
much.
Then finally, the current bill explicitly provides that female-only spaces and programs are prohibited. And it spells that out, that an individual shall not be denied access to a shared facility, including a restroom, a locker room, and a dressing room that is in accordance with the individual's gender identity. Now, we believe that this undermines fundamental female rights to our own bodily boundaries and integrity, to have a right to privacy and personal safety, particularly in light of the epidemic of male violence that we live under. The female-only toilet facilities were one during the first wave of feminism, actually, to allow women to enter the public sphere. And even today, girls in India actually skip school during their periods because of the lack of separate facilities.
Okay, so you think that it's important to have separate facilities in areas where women get dressed and undressed and go to the bathroom, changing rooms, locker rooms. And
It affects like rape crisis centers, battered women shelters, prison cells, all kinds of situations. A woman who's been battered, who's been raped, may not want to share a room or a shower with a person with male genitalia. It's understanding that there's women have certain rights and needs that need to be respected.
So,
Anne, how can we create a win-win here?
Okay,
how can we resolve these conflicts?
Well, okay, I want to get to that, but let me first ask you. So, how we're going to be asked, and I'm sure you've been asked, how are transgender people, particularly transgender women, where are they supposed to go to the bathroom?
Okay. Well, we, in our rewrite, which I'm going to explain what the rewrite consists of, what our amendments consist of, our feminist amendments, one of the provisions in there is that it would not be illegal to have what's called quote-unquote gender-neutral or basically open to everybody facilities as long as it doesn't erode the availability of female-only facilities. And there's such long lines in the bathroom as it is for women that we have to be concerned about that. But we're not opposed to those kind of spaces being set up. I just read recently that in the UK that they had really bad experiences with bringing trans women into the female parts of the prisons. They are now creating special transgender units in the prisons in the UK. So I think that's a good solution. And I think, you know, we need to be able to discuss this and try to come up with a resolution. So,
well, I don't know if all of our audience are going to agree with everything you're saying or even if I agree with everything you're saying, but I do know that it's critical that this be able to be discussed. We covered in our news earlier the fact that two different libraries had two different responses to the attempt to discuss this, simply have a debate about this, since it's a public policy issue, right? Legal laws are changing, right? They're going to affect everybody.
Right.
And yet, if you discuss this, you can be accused of hate speech. And that's very unfortunate, which is one of the reasons I wanted to push back and definitely have this discussion on Joy of Resistance tonight on Free Speech Radio. And may I remind everyone?
I appreciate that. It's very important to democracy to be able to have discussions and that every group that's affected by policy changes and laws have a seat at the table. That's a basic principle of democracy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if I can just review what's in the rewrite of the bill, which we call the Feminist Amendments. We eliminate gender identity, and we create two separate and distinct categories under the law covering sexual orientation and sex stereotyping. And we think this actually adds clarity and creates more comprehensive protections for everybody. Sexual stereotyping is broadly defined, and if I can just quote a little bit of it, sex stereotypes also known as, this is from our amendments, also known as gender roles or gender norms, means notions of proper behaviors, appearance, mannerisms, dress and grooming, socially imposed on males and females respectively. Sex stereotypes are particularly harmful to women and girls. Stereotypes can be restricted to men and boys as well, and discriminatory toward lesbians, gay men, bisexual, and transgender people who do not conform to these stereotypes and or who may otherwise reject the stereotypes assigned to their sex. So it's very broad. It explicitly includes transgender people within this protected class, but it goes beyond that. There was a story recently that I read on Facebook about a little boy who had long hair. He went to school, and he was told that he either had to identify as a girl or cut his hair. So we don't like that. We think people should be able to dress as they like, express themselves as they like, and not have to say anything about having to be a different sex.
Right, but you think it confuses things to merge different categories that are not exactly the same, such as those who have certain kinds of reproductive systems, right? Which with people who identify as various sexes but may not have those reproductive systems. You think those are two different classes of people is what you're saying.
Right. They have a different set of experiences. The experience of being born in a sexist society with a female reproductive system and dealing with those issues that come with sexism in a female reproductive system and how those things work together to oppress women, females. I mean, that needs to be addressed specifically as females. We can't be merged into another group of people who don't fit into the stereotypes and should have their rights respected, but they're not the same as us.
Okay, there's all so much talk about sex, the category of sex not even being a definite thing anymore because there are intersex people and et cetera. How do you respond to that with your definition of what sex is?
Well, I think you could say, if you look through history, that 100% of the people who birthed children are biological females, that though there are some variations that occur, that the overwhelming majority are either male or female. Even most so-called intersex people, people with these type of developmental differences, most of them can be identified as male or female, and that's how there wouldn't even be evolution without sex. We are a sexually dimorphic species, and that's a reality.
So you're saying your sex is not something in your head. It has a biological reality.
Right. It has an objective reality, and on top of that is sexism. And if you disappear when you have sexism, but you can't talk about sex, you can't recognize sex, it's sex blind, you can't address sexism, you can't fight sexism.
So we can't you're saying we can't have a women's movement since we're oppressed as a sex, as women, if we deny the reality of sex itself.
Right. And it's really important that, and women, feminists believe, and my organization believes that, as I said, everyone who does not comply with the stereotypes assigned to their sex should be able to dress and express themselves and call themselves whatever they like. That's really, really important, but we don't want to counter that to the specific needs that females have as well. And we have to balance that. And this isn't the first time there's been conflicts and even calling people being haters when they're not. And one thing that I think about is, especially a few decades ago, less so now, but anyone who is critical of Zionism or Israel were accused of being anti-Semitic. You don't hear that as much now, but it was very, very common then, and there was a tendency to silence people. The reality is our organization is pro-lesbian and gay rights, for the rights of transgender people, but we think it needs to be defined in a way that does not pit one group against the other, but allows us to work together and fight for everyone's rights together.
So you're actually trying to resolve this conflict, which is huge, which is being fought out on the internet all over the place and in specific venues where people are not being allowed to speak, and there have been physical assaults and threats. It's a very huge conflict, and it doesn't do anybody any good to pretend it isn't happening or only on one side. Where can people take a look at the feminist amendments to the Equality Act?
Okay, so we just go on our website, feministstruggle.org. Right now, you have to scroll down to the second page. We're probably going to reorganize, but we haven't been able to do that yet. And you will see information about the feminist amendments, and you will see the original Equality Act there. You'll see the amendments written up together as one document, and then you'll see like a track changes version, so you can see all the changes that we made. And there's also, I believe, a little summary comparing the bill as it is and with the feminist amendment.
Okay.
So all of that's available. And we're working to try to get people to read it and support it. We're going to be starting a campaign really shortly to get endorsements by individuals and organizations. And so we can bring it to the attention of Congress about what we're thinking and how we can resolve this conflict and support everybody's rights. So that's what we want to do. We plan to have public events, and we hope our First Amendment rights are respected when we have them. So that we can discuss these important issues and try to resolve this conflict.
Certainly. I mean, if there's going to be legal changes, people have got to be able to engage in full debate. I don't see any way around that.
Yeah.
Anne Menashe of FIST, Feminists in Struggle, and the website, once again, is feministstruggle.org, right?
Correct.
We're just about out of time. We want to thank you very much for coming on to Joy Resistance and discussing this sometimes confusing subject. I hope we've clarified some things for our audience. We're very interested in hearing from our audience on what we've just presented or in anything that we present. And the best way to get in touch with us is through email at jor@wbai.org. J-O-R for Joy of Resistance, WBAI.org. This is Fran Luck signing off. And
thank you.
And thank you so much, Anne. And next week we'll be preempted, and we'll see you the week after.
Breaking through, and we know the situation calls for something new. There are times we cannot see what's just ahead, but still we
Tuesday at 10 p.m. on Folk Radio, WBAI's new folk music show, we feature a concert from our archives. Dave Van Ronk, Phil Oakes, and Patrick Sky performing live at our free music store in 1973. Tune in Tuesday from 10 p.m. to midnight for Folk Radio, right here on WBAI New York.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
And all across the country, let me tell you that the big money interests are getting very nervous. They're looking at recent polls in New Hampshire and in Iowa, and they're saying, oh my God, Sanders can win.
For the first time, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has more than doubled his lead against other Democratic hopefuls in an Iowa poll from the New York Times by 7 points. But the USA Today Iowa poll shows former Vice President Joe Biden leading 6 points ahead. Iowa State University students Tamara McConnell and Catherine Priebisch attended a Sanders rally in Ames this weekend and planned to caucus for him next week. Regarding the Iowa poll,
I would hope that it's an indicator of how things are going to turn out.
But, like, then again, like, polls can lie. They can, they're not always great indicators. Even my statistics class tells me that. But I do take it, hopefully.
The polls have been all over. In this weekend's national poll from the Washington Post and ABC News, Biden pulled back ahead of the pack with a 9-point lead over Sanders. Elizabeth Warren came in 11 points behind, then Michael Bloomberg at 8%, Andrew Yang at 7%, and Pete Buttigieg at 5%. Polls aside, Warren won another important endorsement this weekend from the Des Moines Register editorial board. So close to the caucuses, many Iowans are still undecided. Any candidate could have a better-than-expected result.
I'll decide the day of, probably, or the night before or something.
Alex Abbey, a high school government teacher in Marshalltown, at a recent Warren event. Because of the design of the Democratic caucuses, if your top candidate doesn't have 15% support at your caucus site, you switch to your second or third choice. Abby plans to come with options.
I'll have two top choices in case my first person isn't viable and I have to move, but I'll decide for myself and I'll just go with it, see what happens.
Alex Salzman, who is standing with Abby, has a first choice candidate.
I like Andrew Yang the most.